Welcome back to Retro Rambles with me, Tom, and today my guest is a new listener to the Variety Show and the Untitled Sci-Fi Show. James, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello, I am James. I am a brand new podcaster, and I do a show called Super A to Z, and talk about games on that and on Blue Sky, really. That's what I do.
So if you hadn't guessed by the name, everyone, there, Super A to Z is going A to Z on the Super Nintendo, the SNES, whatever. What do you call it? Do you call it the Super Nintendo? Do you call it the SNES? What's your chosen name for it?
Mine's always been the SNES. That's just what I've always kind of grown up with. But I've seen so much more recently, Super Nintendo, SNES, the SNES. But yeah, I've always called it the SNES.
Yeah, I've same camp as me then. I always called it the SNES, but yeah, I've heard SNES, which is an odd one seeing it's not got a double S. The Super NES, I've heard a lot, and I think that's more an Americanism. I don't know if that was their advertising at the time, or because people remembered the NES and they kind of just went, this is the next variety, so we're going to call it the Super NES instead. Either way, SNES is, I think, pretty much the British way of calling it. So awesome. What was the last game you reviewed on your show?
Well, the last episode that came out was episode 3, and it was a football game, which isn't really my forte, but it was 90 minutes European Prime Goal. And although the gameplay was pretty standard, I did come across some interesting stuff with the people behind the game. So that was fun.
Oh, that's very cool. Who was the, if you can remember, who was the publisher for that one?
The developer was Namco, and the publisher in Japan was Namco, but over here it was Ocean.
Ah, so yeah, Ocean. Big, if anyone knows their kind of 80s micro machines sort of days of machines, Ocean really kind of owned the landscape of licensed games, I guess. Any movie license, it was an Ocean game. Whether it was good or bad, that's another matter.
Absolutely, yeah. You just saw them on boxes everywhere, especially the sort of the Amstrad, Spectrum, Commodore. Like, those boxes with the Ocean logo were so common. And when I was doing the episode, I was thinking, like, why is it Ocean and not Namco? And maybe in that era, Ocean might have been the bigger name in the UK. Possibly.
So it's a weird era, this era of gaming, the 80s and the early 90s. And Tetris, if you've not watched the Apple film for the Tetris story, well worth watching if you get a chance to. It's absolutely amazing, and it gives you an idea. So in Japan, they had the license for Tetris, and they licensed it in Japan. So Nintendo had, the licensees in Russia, had Tetris. And then they sold that license for the other countries. So it's because they didn't have a company in the UK, I would assume. So Ocean was the UK publisher. Namco didn't have Namco UK at the time. So Ocean said, we'll pay for the license and we'll have it. And I think that's, again, like the movie licenses, how it works. I'm going to say, though, I can't really think of many Ocean games off the top of my head that were in the 16-bit era. As you know, I'm heavily into my old 8-bit games, and yeah, Ocean was everywhere. But when it comes to 16-bit, I can't think of many Ocean games off the top of my head.
No, they had really sort of dropped down. I mean, this was a very late era game on the SNES. It was 95, late end December 95. This one came out, and they were taken over in 96. And they carried on using the Ocean name for a couple of years, and then it was Infogrames that took them over.
Oh, okay, and yes, the old Infogrames, if I remember rightly, was the Rainbow Armadillo logo.
That's it, yeah. So they took them over, and then in 98, they lost the Ocean name completely and just moved to them.
Interesting. Oh, I didn't know that. Now, 95, if we're talking football games, again, not my forte either, but FIFA 95 is where they should have stopped the FIFA series. It was the most perfect game. Mega Drive, mash A, B, and C, and you could foul any character you wanted. Best football game there is. Anyway, we are here for the Retro Ramble. As you can tell, we are online. We're not walking in the park on this one. So we are just going to ramble away to each other over the same 6 questions that we do for everyone. So we'll open up with the very first question. And that is, as always, your first gaming memory, James. So where does your brain go with this?
So for first gaming memory, it goes back to actually 2 completely different systems, but both at the exact same time in my life. We had an Amstrad CPC 464.
Okay.
And an Atari 2600.
A very, very just completely different side of each of the whole market there.
Absolutely. So the Atari, I believe, was my dad's, and the Amstrad was my brother's. And the Amstrad was obviously the, if I wanted to play a game that at the time looked amazing, I would get on the Amstrad compared to the Atari. The Atari was for when my patience was not there and I could not wait for 10 minutes for a cassette tape to load. I'd jump on the Atari and play Adventure or something like that.
I was going to say the 464 was that classic Amstrad that had the cassette deck built in, wasn't it? It wasn't the disc version.
No, not the disc version. It was the cassette version, and we had the color screen, not the green screen monitor for it as well.
Ooh.
So that was nice. The games were amazing. But I was a very impatient child, and just putting one of them tapes in. I remember we had a lot of the compilation tapes, and if you wanted to play a certain game on the compilation tape, you had to kind of remember what time code that game was on the tape to fast forward through to that. And it was a bit of a science, really, getting the games. And then half the time they didn't work, so you'd end up having to choose something else. That was the sort of the defining gaming moment for me, was jumping on the Amstrad with some really crappy joysticks that didn't turn left properly, and you had to really ram them. When I was in a more I want to play a game straight away mood, I'd get the Atari out of a dusty old drawer and get it plugged in, I never really went back from there. That was from that moment onwards, I was in, and that was it. And I was playing with my dad, with my brother, we'd all play all the way through to modern day. Now my dad still plays. He's got thousands of hours in Minecraft now.
that's brilliant. But isn't it funny? So you're saying the Atari 2600 was your dad. Now, knowing my parents, neither of them would have even ever considered having a computer for themselves. We only had a computer, the Speccy in this case, 48K classic. We only had that in the house because my parents thought, well, we should get one for the kids. And they were generally ahead of the game a little bit there, where they said, well, we know this is where the future's going, so we'll get it for the kids and it will be a family computer. But they would never have touched it. So it's just funny to hear that your dad had a 2600 and you played it with him. But now you look at modern day, and I guess we're in that boat again, aren't we? So I'm a dad myself. I've got two kids, and they know I have an Xbox, a PlayStation, and everything else under the sun over there. And it's just like, oh, hang on a moment. So yeah, I'm doing that with them now.
Absolutely, yeah. It's exactly that. I mean, my dad obviously was very into it. My mum very much wasn't, like polar opposites. So my mum was very much just not interested whatsoever. But weirdly, it was my mum that just turned up one day in the late 90s with a newspaper cutting from the new PlayStation, and she doesn't know anything about computers at all, and she was like, I've heard this is quite good, do you want it? Yes, please.
Oh, now that's the sort of mum I think we all want. That's amazing.
I know.
God, I remember all the adverts for the PlayStation. I was buying the Games Master magazine, I guess it would have been at the time.
Yep.
And yeah, they heavily advertised it, and then seeing kind of the original Tomb Raider, and very, very fond memories of the PlayStation. And I still think, and I know that we're heavily agreed with across the world on this one, that intro sound of a PlayStation is still the best sound you can hear out of any digital equipment. It's that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do actually. I mentioned in, I think it was the most recent episode that I did, that the PlayStation is my second favorite. So SNES is my favorite console. PlayStation is probably my second favorite console of all time, because partly because of that nostalgia of that, just that sound alone. But the catalog was fantastic. And so, yeah, when she turned up that day, and it was always very against me, because I used to have the biggest tantrums on the SNES when I couldn't beat a level, and I'd throw the controller, and she'd be like, well, you're going to have to turn it off now. And she'd get really angry with me. And so, yeah, for her to turn up and be like, yeah, I've heard this is supposed to be quite good, do you want it? I'm just like, yes, I would like it, please.
I guess I would argue, actually, the PlayStation, and okay, you could extend this out to actually the Xbox original and the PlayStation 2. Those were the last three consoles of our generation, and even all the recent generations, that were affordable. So, I mean, the N64 came out, you were looking at £50 for a game. Cartridges, always known to be expensive. it was what it was. But the PlayStation, yeah, you had new releases come out and they wanted £30-35 for them, but they also came out with the Platinum range. You were buying some of the best games ever released on console for £19.99.
Yeah, it was great. It was the first time that I ever got to a stage where I could get more than 3 or 4 games a year. You know, when I had the SNES and things like that beforehand, even if I went to look for a secondhand game, they weren't cheap unless you went in a real bargain basement, sort of bottom of the bucket sort of things at the video shop. And even then, most of the time they were crap games. So it was just, when the PlayStation came around, I could actually afford some games.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I mean, I remember the secondhand market crashing really when it came to SNES and Mega Drives, when the 32-bit consoles really finally took grip. But I do remember the only place that I found an affordable SNES cartridge that I bought for a friend, funny enough, it wasn't even mine because we didn't have a SNES, was Blockbuster. And it was an ex-rental cartridge. So you can imagine how much that had been abused.
Yeah.
But it was affordable at that point. Oh, crikey. Okay, well, that's a great first memory. We'll move on to then your first console that you were bought or you bought.
Well, surprisingly enough, that would be the SNES. I was also bought the PlayStation, as I mentioned a minute ago, but the SNES was Christmas of the year it came out. It was 93, I think.
So I could probably do a very quick Google for
I think it came out early December 93, and I think I got it Christmas Day 93. So they got it pretty much when it came out.
So April 92, it came out in the United Kingdom.
Oh, okay, so it must have been Christmas 92 then, yeah.
Yeah, so it was priced at £150 at launch.
Wow.
That would have been a significant amount of money for 92.
Mm. Yeah, and I had no idea. I didn't ask for it. So they knew I wanted it. I had a cousin that had an NES and NES. And I didn't go there very often, but when I went there, it was obvious that I was obsessed with his console. And so I didn't ask for the SNES, had no idea. And I don't think I'd ever even seen a new boxed console before. So when I saw the wrapped box under the tree, I wasn't sort of instantly like, oh, I know what that is. Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah. I had no idea until it was the one that had a Mario All-Stars pack in.
Yeah, so I was literally just reading that here, funny enough, that it's at launch, it came with Super Mario World and the only other two games available at launch, F-Zero, classic, absolutely legendary game, and Super Tennis. But yeah, I'm guessing by Christmas they must have released, Super Mario All-Stars. And that you're right, it was a pack in package. It was more black than anything, the box, I think it was, because you had that classic artwork. I think Super Mario's in a top hat, isn't he, in the
artwork? Yes, I believe so, yeah. And I had no idea. I ripped that paper off and there was that amazing Nintendo artwork, Mario, and all striking bright colors, and I don't think I left my room for the rest of the day. I was just because I hadn't had the NES beforehand. I'd played the Mario games, but I hadn't ever played through them fully. So I started on Mario 1 and I just worked my way through all of them. And it was just the best.
No, that's absolutely amazing. Now, when did you first come across the SNES, though? So I think for me, and I'm sure I've said this in previous either rambles or previous variety shows, Boots the Pharmacist was the way I discovered what games consoles really were at that era, because they still had a standing cabinet with a Mega Drive and a standing cabinet with a SNES.
Yeah, so that is, I can't remember whether it was Boots or whether it was Woolworths or Electronics Boutique. I'm not sure, but I definitely went, I had one of those, the stand-up demo consoles, and I would play on that anytime I'd go into town. So that would be my first sort of experience with the console itself. I can't even remember what the game. I'm guessing it was Mario World that was in the demo unit.
I would have assumed so. Yeah.
Yeah, and so yeah, that was my first experience with the SNES itself. And then, as saying before, with things like Games Master magazines, I would see it in Games Master, and just I was obsessed with it. I was obsessed with wanting this, but I didn't expect it at all. So I don't think I even put it on my Christmas list or anything, because I just knew it was such an unrealistic thing, because my mum, as I said, wasn't into gaming at all.
Yeah.
And I was just like, well, you know, I'm not likely to get it. I'll ask for a bike or something instead. And yeah, then come down in the morning and there it is. And that was the first console. There is a very slight extra additional story to my consoles that were bought for me, because just very quickly, I had a birthday where I had a Game Boy Advance bought for me.
Yeah,
whatever year that came out.
So the Advance would have been 2001, I want to say.
Okay, yep. So my birthday is the 2nd of August, which is coming up very soon. My sister's birthday is the 11th of July, and I did ask for the Game Boy Advance, and my mum got me the Game Boy Advance, and she had said to my sister, and I didn't know about this until afterwards, really sorry, but I can't get you much for your birthday this year because I'm getting James a Game Boy Advance.
Oh!
Is she's 10 years older.
Okay. No, fine, so, okay. A little bit different, but even then, that's a...
It's pretty harsh.
That is incredibly harsh. 22nd of June 2001.
Okay, yes. Yeah,
which makes sense with it being a birthday present with how close it would have been.
Yeah.
Were you the sort of child that circled things in the Argos catalogue?
Absolutely, yeah. I did it all the time, all the catalogues, Index, and all the other ones that we had back then when it wasn't just Argos.
Good God, yes, Index. That's a name from the past.
Yeah, yeah. I can't even remember when that went out of business, but it was basically Argos, wasn't it? It was its own... there was a few different Argos-style shops, and Argos were the only ones that seemed to... weather the storm,
yeah,
and still be here.
I can't remember if Index was part of Littlewoods, or if Littlewoods was part of Index, or if it became Littlewoods.
I think it became Littlewoods Index, possibly for a short period of time. And yeah,
I think the difference being with Argos, I know they had the Argos card you could have, but that typically was straight up, you went in and you purchased, didn't you? Whereas I think Littlewoods and Index were more, you could go in and purchase, but there was also the, we'll do it on tick. So you'll be paying £2,000 for this £500 item.
Yes.
Across a two-year period.
Yeah, that's right. I was very, very much into getting the catalogues and circling a load of game stuff and toys. Mighty Max was a big thing in that era that I really wanted for Christmas and birthdays and stuff. So I would, I'd circle all that and just leave it casually just sort of on the coffee table or something for someone to find.
Excellent. Okay. Well, we've talked about Argos. We've talked about Index, funny enough. Seeing that you are in a different part of the world to me in the UK here. So, what we've discovered in this is that everyone had their standard places to go and buy games, Boots, Smiths, Woolies, you name it. And then obviously the more younger people that came along, we've had things like GameStop and Games Exchange, Game, Electronics Boutique, all of those. But then you also had the local game shops that were kind of owned by private individuals. And that's where this question really comes in. So the game shop that you remember the most...
Okay, so I actually grew up on the South Coast, so I was I'm up north now, but I was down south when I was growing up. So obviously you've got your Electronics Boutique and things like that, but there was a video rental shop in a little town called Storrington, just down the road from where I was, and it was just amazing. I still remember my dad's membership number. Because he'd go he'd not have his card, so he'd just reel off this four-digit membership number every single time we rented something, and there was just VHSs up on the walls, and all them that time where you'd go in and pick a film from the X rental thing just based on the picture on the front or the blurb on the back, not having any idea what the actual film was about. And that the whole shop, I can just see it in my mind like so clearly, and they had this big section of... At one point was Amstrad and Spectrum cassette tapes, and then obviously progressed into cartridges, NES, SNES. You could rent them, you could rent the consoles as well. And then you could also buy the X-Rental cartridges and things. And it was pretty much, because if I went into town with electronics boutique or something like that, 9 times out of 10, I wasn't going to be able to get a game, because if they weren't full price, they were only slightly reduced to second hand. But this little video store, you could go in and you could get a cartridge for a couple of quid that's been X rental, like you said about X rental games getting knocked about for God knows how long. So that store was just I'd go every Saturday morning and I'd either look for a video to rent or a game to either rent or buy, and got so many awful, awful games from that shop and so regretted the rental, the purchase so badly. But every now and again, I would come across a little hidden gem that I've never seen since. And it was just such a, like the highlight of my week was Saturday morning going down and having a look to see what I could bring back that day.
Oh, that's phenomenal. Now, I mean, because we didn't have consoles in my house until, I think my parents' rule was, once you can afford it, you can buy it yourself. So the first real console we had was a Mega Drive, and that was my brother's. He bought second hand, and then he bought a PlayStation 1. By the time I was able to kind of afford consoles, the first one I bought was the proper Xbox, the original Xbox, in what, 2001, 2002 when it came out. You kind of missed the rental game by that point, but I'd also been banned from renting from Blockbuster any at this point. So I'd got a Blockbuster membership maybe a year before, forgotten to take back at least 2 videos, and then just got told your membership's cancelled and you're never allowed one again. So it's like, oh, brilliant. So I'll just have to buy games from now on. And it's been bugging me. It was Game Station. That was the other name.
Game Station,
Electronics Boutique and Game. Not GameStop, not Games Exchange. That's Computer Exchange, I was thinking.
That's
Anyway. Right, okay. So Game Shop you remember most, done. What about your worst gaming memory? So what was your worst either memory or your most let down moment? What made you really crushingly disappointed?
This is going to be a controversial take. And I will put a disclaimer in to say that my current opinion is very different, and I'm no longer disappointed or upset about this game at all.
Okay.
But at the time, so when my mum came back with my little newspaper cutout for the PlayStation, she got me the PlayStation, but all it had was Demo 1, the pack-in demo.
That was a good demo disc.
It had the interactive T-Rex. And yes. Whatever games were on the disc, I can't remember, but I played the hell out of that. But I didn't have any actual games. So we went to a town nearby, and there was this little game shop. I remember it being like a really narrow, just like a sort of a corridor almost with games either side. And they had 6 PS1 games for sort of 10 or each, whatever, pre-owned. And mum said that I could pick 2 games. I had no idea really what the PS1 games were. Sony was a new thing. There was no Mario, there was no Sonic, it was all new stuff. And so I had a look at a couple of games. One of the games, it continues to be a disappointment. My opinion hasn't changed. It was a game called Tunnel B1.
Yes.
I still have no idea. I mean, maybe I'll revisit it and maybe it won't be as bad, but I still have no idea what that game's about or how it works. I don't know.
It's funny. It's one of those games that I can immediately imagine what the front cover looked to it. I think it was one of those ones everyone knows it by name and look.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what the game was.
No, not at all. Now, the other game that I picked up was Worms.
Original Worms. Very good.
Now, I love Worms now, but at the time I didn't know anything about it. I looked on the back and I thought, it's a 2D platformer, because I could see platformy bits and I could see little characters. Yes. And I was like, I love Mario, I'll get this little 2D platformer. Brilliant. I got it home, and first of all, I read the instructions, but I feel like I either didn't read them properly I don't really know. But so first of all, you get stupid funny little cutscene. I loved the cutscenes in the original Worms. And then I'm setting the game up, and I don't know if you had to choose to have a human controlled team and they defaulted to computer. I can't remember, but I feel like they defaulted to computer. In the first game I got into, I didn't have any control over anything and I didn't know what was going on. And then eventually when I did get in control of the Worms, I had a time limit, and I had I press X to jump, and I fired a bazooka into the ground, and that was suddenly it was someone else's turn, and I'm thinking, turn? What? Why am I? Why is it turns? I don't understand. And I just got so annoyed that I just bought these two games for this console, and I put demo one back in, and I was playing with that T-Rex because I was so upset that I had got these two games, and I didn't. But I would say a few days, a week later, or something, and it was either my dad or my brother that sort of sat down with me, and we had a look at it, and eventually we kind of got our heads around it, and we worked out what it was, and we also worked out that you could do multiplayer with one controller, and I only had one controller, so that was a huge selling point. And suddenly everyone was playing it, and suddenly I loved it. And so there was that short period of time where I don't think I've ever been that disappointed, because I was so excited to get a couple of games for this 3D console that was it was everything I'd ever wanted, and I got them both back.
2D game that was a I can fully understand that. I mean, the original Worms, I mean, part of the fun was just naming your team, and let alone when you'd finally got into a game and playing it. And yet the cutscenes, just phenomenal, the music to it, brilliant. The voice clips, I think as soon as I had a phone capable of it, I had the voice clips as message tones and all of that going on. Worms is just one of those games that will go down in history. And as much as I love Worms 2, I think I still have more love for the original Worms and for what it did and what Team 17 did with that game.
Yeah, I agree. The more Worms 2, Worms Armageddon, into all the modern ones, they look gorgeous, and I love the art style, the comedy of the pre-made teams and the voice clip, and you can change to all these different accents and things. It's brilliant. But that first game, there was just something about the fact that the worms were just these tiny little tiny blobs. There was no features to them, no animation to them much, really, but also the weapons were all pretty much your basic weapons. There was no holy hand grenade, there was no concrete donkey or anything like that.
You had your really basic, I mean, you still had the sheep, you had the banana.
Yep, I think those were the two weirdest ones. I think everything else was just grenade, cluster bomb.
Yeah, I think it was fairly generic. I think it was when it was worm reinforcements, they introduced a few more interesting things.
That's right.
But I don't think that got... I can't tell you if that got a PlayStation release or not. I know it got an Amiga release, and it definitely got the PC release, but...
I don't think it did. I think it was just PC and Amiga. I'm pretty sure it didn't get a PlayStation release. I don't even think Worms 2 got a PlayStation release. I think it got an N64 release.
No, Worms 2 did end up on the PlayStation 2.
Did it? Right.
I'm pretty sure it did.
I know Worms Armageddon did, I think. But anyway, that first Worms game is now... It's so weird for it to be the biggest disappointment that I can remember, but also potentially now it's actually one of the biggest sort of nostalgic feelings, because it did get everybody involved. My dad played it, my brother played it, even my sister played it, and she does play games, but not a huge amount. My mum never played it though. I never managed to get mum to play it. I think mum's watched a couple of me play a couple of different games, and she's liked a couple of games to watch, but I don't think she's ever played a game in her life.
Brilliant.
So no worms for her, but naming the team was brilliant. I would name a team full of like my friends at school and stuff like that, and it was just
we had friends from school, we had diseases, we had dictators, I think was one of them. I can confirm Worms 2 was released for PC and PlayStation.
Oh, okay, right.
So, that was 97.
Right.
What I didn't realise, and I can't believe that this is right, that Worms 2 Armageddon was 2009.
Wow.
It feels way, way, way earlier than that. I'm going to say that is wrong. That has got to be wrong.
Yeah, that must be a re-release or something of it. Because I'm sure.
Yeah, Worms Armageddon 99. I knew it could not have been to that. That must have been like an Xbox Live Arcade.
But, of course, yeah.
But there you go. PS1 and Dreamcast for Armageddon.
Right, yeah.
So even that got that must have been the last Worms game that they released on the original PlayStation. But anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, retro or modern gaming, which are you going to choose?
It's probably not really much of a surprise. I'm going to go with retro. But it's weird because I've seen stuff recently online where people are talking about the Xbox 360 as though it's a retro console. And I'm not into that.
So this is a big bone of contention that I have. What is considered retro? What isn't considered retro? And I draw the line at the PlayStation 2, I think, and just about the original Xbox as being retro. And even then, I find that hard to really consider retro.
Yeah, I would agree with that. My hard line is PS1. N64, mm-hmm. Saturn, that era, but it ekes a little bit into PS2. It's weird because I kind of look at PS2 as retro, but for some reason I don't look at original Xbox as retro, even though they were the same sort of time.
I think realistically, and I'll probably get a lot of flack for this, but the original Xbox, and I was a big fan of that. And I've said this before in many other conversations, I did the pre-sales for the Xbox at Game. It was a different standard of games console to the ones that we'd been getting. Mm-hmm. Okay, it lost out to the PlayStation 2 in the end, but it was Microsoft's first console, and what they did with it was absolutely mind-blowing. As a console, hard drive, put your own music on it. The graphics were stunning. There was one particular game that came out, was called Reckless, the Yakuza Missions. One of my favorite games on the original mm-hmm. Xbox. Came out on GameCube, came out on PlayStation, PlayStation 2. And if you look at all three side by side, the Xbox absolutely pisses all over the other two.
Yep. Yeah, it was...
It's a masterpiece of hardware, and I just don't think we were quite ready for that era, which is why when the 360 came along... Boom, it was a massive thing. I would say, though, you can't draw the line at the N64. You'd have to include the Dreamcast as well, just because it had that couple of years towards the older consoles than the newer ones.
Yeah, definitely. I would 100% agree with that. So, I have to stick with retro up to that kind of point in my mind is N64, Dreamcast, PlayStation, Saturn, that sort of limit there. And I've even more so recently, I think I always would have stuck with retro, but even more so recently now that I've started playing these games for my show. And you know, I'm only four games in now because I've started my next one, and they're four games that I've never played before. And if I could cut off, we still have today's modern technology. I wouldn't want to have retro now, and the only way to play retro now would be on a Amstrad CPC 464 or a Spectrum or something like that. Yeah. Modern technology with retro games is where I would go with it, because there is decades of content to get through that I have never even seen before. I could get through the rest of my life and not play another new game and still... not see it all.
And I mean, it's obviously an argument then that I know which side you'd fall to, which is emulation versus original hardware. Now, I love original hardware. Don't get me wrong. I think it's absolutely phenomenal. You cannot beat the feel of an original rubber-keyed Speccy, or, as you say, an Amstrad 464. The feeling of pressing the eject button and hearing that click of plastic as it pops up by spring. Mm-hmm. Yes, you cannot beat that. You can, however, beat the 10 minutes of fucking about trying to get a game loaded just to play it for 5 minutes and then go, let's start another game. So there are certain things that emulation will always help with, especially on those older generations. And I think for me, emulation will always have a place, because while we close down digital stores and games that were brilliant that may not have sold as many, selling for £300-£500 per copy, because the retro market is just so hostile at the moment, it's going to be emulation. I mean, I would, I'm with you. I choose retro all the way. But I need modern to be able to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would, like you say, I love the original hardware. I love, playing a SNES game on a CRT TV. It's a really nice sort of feeling. It's a nice look, but I'm an adult now, and I have to look at convenience as well. And I do not have the time nor the patience to play what I want to play the way it's supposed to be played. So, or the space.
Let's face it. If we wanted to play as we always, and I think you'd be like myself and Rob here, you would have dreamt of having a 32-inch Sony Triniton at home to plug your home console into. And most of us may do with a 13-inch portable TV from something like Sharp or whatever it was. And if we wanted to do it properly now, we'd go out, we'd find that CRT screen. Where do you put it all now?
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. And there isn't room, because you know, you've got the CRT TV, which is huge, and then you've got your console, but you don't just want to have the SNES, you maybe want to have the Mega Drive as well. And the consoles, they weren't as sort of, consoles are much bigger now, but they were all, like the Xboxes are for the most part, nice and square, so you can get them. None of the consoles are really like, you got your Spectrum was the keyboard and the cassette, depending on which Spectrum you get. True. But like you had to have the whole thing out, the keyboard out and everything. So it's the room and the places to put all these things. And then there's the games as well, because especially if you want to go full completionist and get boxed games and stuff like that, SNES games are big cardboard boxes. Yeah. Mega Drive games are big plastic boxes with little hanger things on top of them.
Well, yes, they were not designed for storage. I mean, we can thank DVDs really to be kind of the media of choice now for proper storage, even though it destroyed the big box market of PC games, which still hurts to this day that you can't go to a shop and buy a big box of something.
Yeah.
But it did make sense for storage. So I can understand why they did that, because, yeah, the SNES, the boxes were like toilet paper. They just didn't survive.
I know. And it absolutely pains me to look back at what I used to have and what I know for a fact that I just threw away, because I had a plastic tub that I had my cartridges in, and I had Turtles in Time, which is boxed now worth God knows how much. I know I had the box, and yeah, I was just like, I don't need this. It's a piece of cardboard. It's, you know, and even if I did happen to keep a box, it would be ruined.
Well, this is it. Unless you were going to be so forethinking that you took the game out, then you flat packed the box, put it in a sealed plastic bag, each box, they just don't survive. It's just
no.
Such a rarity.
Yeah, no, I was sort of 6-7 years old, so I was not doing anything like that at all. I was, here's a new game, rip, grab.
Oh no, I've ripped the end off. Doesn't matter, there's the cartridge. Let's go. Okay, then, let's head to the last question. Question, we just like the rest that we've asked everyone else, what is your desert island game? Which game would you take with you and play no matter what for as long as you needed?
I'm going to go back against what I've just said slightly a little bit here, because my desert island game isn't actually a retro game.
Which is absolutely fine. That's the beauty of this. We don't have to accept that, although we might be retro gamers. I mean, there are phone games that I use for when I go for poo time, for example, that I've probably sunk more hours into than some of the games I've ever paid for.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you weren't dragging the CRT TV and the SNES console in there. My Desert Island game, I think, and I thought about this for ages, but I think it would have to be one of the Animal Crossing games.
You see, that is a series I have never, ever played.
Yeah. I got the first one, well, not the first one, because the first one was actually a Japanese exclusive on the N64. I think it was called Animal Forest. But the GameCube one, I went into Game Station and I just saw it. And it was brand new, 50 quid. And at the time, I was working in Virgin Megastore. And I didn't earn a great deal of money. I don't think I bought a new game. I think it might have been the first ever brand new game of that sort of price that I'd bought. And I just looked at it and I thought, yeah, this looks a bit of fun. It'll be interesting. And it just hooked me because it was so just relaxing and there was no urgency. And so I took it home, plugged it in, put it into the GameCube, and any other Animal Crossing game that's come out since I have bought. And it's, there's just so much. If you're stuck on a desert island for however long, everything is time-based on Animal Crossing. So if you want to collect all of the fossils,
you need to progress.
The fossils is probably a bad example because I think you can get them throughout any time of the year. But say you wanted to collect all the insects, certain insects only come out in November, real time. So if you want to collect a certain moth that only comes out in November, you have to wait until November to get that moth. And so if I'm stuck on a desert island, I need stuff to look forward to. And I think if I've got that game, if I could maybe just sneak a little guidebook along with me as well, just so I could keep an eye on like when things are going to be coming around. Certain fish only come out on days when it's raining, and certain bugs only come out on certain like sunny days or cloudy days. And then there's fossils to collect, and you donate the fossils to a museum, and when you've got all of the T-Rex things, as a T-Rex you can go in and look at it, and it's all there, and you can go in and look at all your fish that you've caught in fish tanks and things. And it's just so relaxing, but there's also so much to do, especially the most recent one, the Switch one, I think is probably the best one so far. It's just, there's always something, and I think it would just keep my interest for forever. And I keep going back to it now. And the only downside to it is if you go away for quite a while and you go back, everything, all the weeds have grown up in your town, and you have to go around, you have to clear the weeds away, and everyone's really angry at you. But no, it's just such a nice, chill, relaxed game. And there's so much to do that would keep you going for a year or in 2 years if you didn't get everything the first year round. And there's special events on Halloween and Christmas and Easter and all that sort of thing. So it's just the sort of game that I think would just keep my interest until a ship came along and rescued me.
That sounds an absolutely awesome choice. I can't see any reason why that wouldn't be a good idea. Well, that's all the questions. So what we now do, whenever we've had a guest, we've always given them a chance to advertise their show, advertise who they are, where they can be found. So, James, over to you. Tell the people where they can find you, where they can find your show, and fire away.
Okay, thank you very much. As I said at the start, I do a show called Super A to Z, and it is me playing through the Super Nintendo games from A to Z. I haven't got to A yet. I've only done numbers. That's what I do. It's not just this talking about the game as such. I look at the people behind the game, what they maybe moved on to do. The most recent episode that I did, 90 Minutes, is quite an interesting group of people behind that went on to do some quite interesting things. And I had a lot more fun researching it than I did before, than I thought I would. I look at the reviews of the time. I go through the scans of magazines, Games Master magazine and stuff like that, and have a look at the reviews of the time rather than modern website reviews. Just try and get as much information from when the game came out as possible, and kind of let people know about it. So that's what I do. And I'm only on episode three episodes up, and the fourth is going to come. I do it every Wednesday. And I am on Blue Sky, and I am Jimbo 8E6, which is Jimbo, the number 8, the letter E, the number 6. That's my username on there, and that's where I post when new episodes come out and things. The episodes will be on most of the big podcast sort of sites and things like that. And so that's me, that's what I do, and check it out.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for being a guest on the show. If you would like to hear more Retro Rambles, where we've had people like Slopes Game Room, we've had Mr. Biffo, we've had Rob from the Variety Show, we've had a few other people on here, and we've got a few names coming up. We've got broadcaster and possible contender for Godfather of Podcasting, Ollie Mann of Answer Me This and various other podcasts, also coming doing a ramble, and I will actually be going for a walk with him. They're all coming up this year, so keep an eye out for those. You can find out more about the Variety Show podcast, which this is part of, on channel84.co.uk. You can email me at tj@channel84.co.uk. And if you'd like to take part in the show, please do email me and we'll organise a meeting like we have here. If there is anything else, just head over to channel84.co.uk. You can find all our social media choices and connections there. You'll also find out about our other shows, which is The Variety Show, The Untitled Sci-Fi Show, Lightly Used, Who Takes the Socks Off, and our new 5-minute film review series called The Land Before Prime. James, thank you very much for joining me tonight, and I look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're very welcome. Take care, and goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye.